You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Elise Steele. Elise, it's good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's great to be here.
So Elise, the way the show starts is with a big question that gives us a chance to start to get to know each other. Who are you? What do we need to know about the pieces of your life to get this conversation started?
Yeah. Well, I, first and foremost, I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Jesus. That has influenced, of course, a lot of my life, but particularly even the professions I've pursued after college. So both of the organizations I work for are Christian organizations. I work for a church called the Vineyard Church, and also a local organization called Community Faith Partners that's all about uniting the body of Christ. And so both of those organizations are really great ways for me to display my gifts and to be able to feel like I'm tangibly serving God every day, which is really exciting for me. Who else am I? I think I'm a thinker. I am a people person. Sometimes a people pleaser too much. I am adventurous. I seek adventure in my everyday life in many different ways.
Such as?
I love traveling. I haven't had the means to travel very much yet, but I like to even adventure just around Ithaca, places that other people haven't gotten off. I like being involved in my community wherever I am. So even on Ithaca College's campus, I wanted to get involved on the college campus, but more so in the Ithaca community, more than a lot of other students that I noticed. And so I really value intergenerational friendships. I think there's a lot to be gained from that, that I don't think other people my age necessarily valued quite as much. And I think I learned a lot from that, more so than just in my classes.
Sure, sure. And where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from Huntington, West Virginia. It's right where Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia meet, right in that little tri-state area.
Right. Yes, and I've driven through it, though I've not spent much time there.
It is both a nice place, not a place that I necessarily want to move back to, right. but a place that I have grown to appreciate more.
And it's very much the heart of industrial America.
It is, very much so. And it's Appalachia, but it's not quite coal country. But at the same time, I know that my roots are in coal country. Right. So that's something that I've been kind of processing lately, is what my identity is coming out of that, as somebody who's left that culture voluntarily, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, I left Missouri in a similar sure. Sort of way. Mm-hmm. It's good to get to know you. So what should we start with musically?
You can start with a song by the Oh Hellos. They're a really awesome band that I actually got to see at the Haunt a couple years ago. And the song is called Second Child, Restless Child. And I actually wrote a quote from it on my graduation cap. And it was, I was born a restless child. I'm trying to think of the exact words. Something about I want to... basically wanting to wander, and I identify with that because I don't necessarily see myself as a very settled person.
Right.
While I do, like I said, like to be very involved in whatever community I'm in, I don't necessarily, when I think about my future, I don't see settling down in one place for very long, because I think I'm kind of a wanderer in some ways. Right. So.
And a few decades ago, there was a great bumper sticker: not all who wander are lost.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Okay, here we go.
Recognize the devil in me.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Elise Steele. So Elise, what are some of the experiences that you look back on now as having really shaped the kind of life you live now and that you value? Mm-hmm. I mean, you are deeply connected to this community in very powerful spiritual ways, but Christian ways, but you're also deeply committed to a bigger life.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I mentioned my roots being in West Virginia, and not just in West Virginia, but just the type of life I lived. We don't come from a lot of money and that sort of thing. So even though I mentioned that I love adventure and travel, that's really something that I kind of discovered after leaving, mm-hmm. But I think I longed for before. Right, and that's right. The quote that I mentioned from the other song. That's why that kind of resonated with me. I had a longing to uh-huh. kind of wander. And so I think just experiencing a, in some ways, more simple life growing up, that has influenced me in just the way that I also want to live.
What made it simple? What do you mean by that?
I guess just honestly not having a ton of resources. We were fine growing up, mm-hmm. but we didn't have, you know, a ton of money to do these big, you know, European vacations that some of my friends were going to. So we appreciated more things like just a road trip to the beach where we happened to have a friend who had a house and eating peanut butter and jelly and just enjoying nature. Right. The beach specifically, that my mom really loved the beach. And so we went there every year for my birthday to Oak Island, North Carolina. But that was kind of a different vacation than a lot of my, I would have friends. I just appreciated that and grew up with that. I didn't think anything. I thought, you know, this is great. And then when I started to have other friends who would tell me about their excursions and their, you know, I never went to Disney World or anything like that. So they would tell me about those things. And that's when I guess I kind of realized that I'm not, you know, the most well off or whatever. And so that kind of just put it in perspective in a way. And I think that's something I'm glad I was prepared for a little bit in, you know, starting in middle and high school, because then coming to Ithaca College, where there's just so much privilege, I was more prepared for the fact that, you know, I just didn't grow up with what the majority of my friends did. And that's fine.
Right. Yeah. I did not really know that I was poor until I came to Cornell as a student in 1976. Mm-hmm. But then it wasn't even, I didn't really even know then that I was poor, although, I mean, I realized mm-hmm. the huge difference.
Sure.
But when I went back to Missouri to visit, and people said, we don't understand how your family survived in that house that the wind could have blown down.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind mm-hmm. of like hit me hard that even by those standards,
right.
it was, so yeah, it soaks in waves.
Yeah, and I don't think you can usually really realize that until you leave.
Yes.
And leaving doesn't necessarily even need to be a physical, like leaving and going to New York, for example,
right.
but it could be leaving, you know, the situation. It could right. be leaving and entering a new family through, you know, marriage, or, you know, it could be so many different things, but you need to have those experiences in order to fully understand your own experience. And I think I'm still understanding that and processing it.
Sure. I mean, you're young. I'm still processing it, and I'm almost 59. What I was also thinking about is when one says simple, it also oftentimes means not complex or not self-consciously complex.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And is that part of what you mean by that comment, or just me modest?
I think a little bit, yeah. I mean, even something like, so I'm an only child, I don't have siblings. And so even the way that I would entertain myself was less complex, or the ways, I don't know, I guess I was a curious child, but also, but not too much so. I wasn't necessarily somebody who was constantly learning things outside of school or anything like that. And so even then, I guess the way, just what I did every day was a little bit more simple, I guess.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, but so that would be, I guess, one experience that changed. Another milestone experience would be 2 summers ago. I actually got to live in Beirut, Lebanon for 2 months. And that was an extremely life-changing experience. I had been out of the country before. I had been on like a little high school mission trip to Peru. But in Lebanon, I just got to really fall in love with another culture, mm-hmm. In a way that I hadn't before. Just start to see some of the differences and some of the reasons why I loved it so much. And since then, at the time, I really knew nothing about the culture or the history, which in hindsight, I was so silly and so naive to go in without having really educated myself on at least the basics of, you know, the Beirut Civil War and the things that you would expect that if you're going to go there, you should probably know.
Well, or not. I mean, the thing is that what you did is you allowed yourself to be naive.
That's true.
And many times we want to be prepared that we lose our naivete before we actually learn anything.
That's true. And I guess going back to the whole simplicity idea, there was a simplicity in the way that I could interact with people that was a little bit uninhibited because of that. I mean, of course, I will always be inhibited by my own personal biases and stereotypes that I've grown up with, especially, you know, growing up in West Virginia, where the conservative political mindset tends to lend itself to certain racisms and stuff. And so those are things that since college, I've really kind of had to dive into myself of, okay, oh my goodness, how did my culture form me? And how can I completely say no to that, you know, as far as just the way I see the world and people.
And how can I say no to the prejudice, but how can I keep my honest reactions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's
in
true.
What you had in Lebanon, mm-hmm. in that naive way, is it's all genuine.
It is.
It's hard to be affected when you don't know much.
Yeah. And I get to go back to Lebanon this summer, and I'm really excited because now, since then, I have educated myself more in little ways. You know, there's so much that I have to learn, but I at least have an understanding of what exactly they went through in the late 70s and 80s. And that I see now is really crucial to understanding. I'm sure I'll have experiences where I hear the exact same thing and I think, oh, I had no idea what they meant by that the first time. Mm-hmm. And now I just understand it because most of the people I'll be working with were alive in during the war. And I mean, there was another smaller war in 2006, but just understanding that, I'm really, really looking forward to going back because of that. But
and what work will you be doing?
So there's an organization called One Hope. It's a global Christian ministry based in South Florida, and they actually have partner organizations and churches around the world. And so I get to partner with a local organization called New Heights. And one of the reasons I think that's so awesome is because New Heights is totally local. Everyone who works there is either Lebanese or Syrian. I think there's one Palestinian, but he's lived in Lebanon his whole life. And
so why do they bring you in?
Well, exactly. So we are honestly just shadowing. We're just kind of watching, seeing how they do ministry well, you know, technically helping out on the day to day, but we aren't going in to give them anything because we really have nothing to give, nothing productive. But we go over ministry. We talk about, you know, how they do things, and I just truly learn. And so I get to go back this year as the program coordinator, which means I get to be like a team leader to about six other interns that are doing this for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I'm really looking forward to it.
And that's one of the ways, in light of privilege and colonialism, that many Christian organizations have flipped the script.
Exactly. And it kills me because I, since high school, I've kind of had this idea that maybe I wanted to do some sort of missions work. Mm-hmm. You know, when I went to Peru for the first time, I felt like God was maybe leading me there. But I had nobody growing up in West Virginia in high school to tell me the problems with, you know, missions work. And
right.
I don't even think I knew what the Crusades were at that point. And so then coming to college, I had this extreme opposite experience where everyone is so focused on, you know, the hurt and colonialism and all of these things that they could never see ministry being ever a good thing. And so I'm kind of reconciling the two and figuring out where I work in the middle. And the reason why I love the program I'm doing is because, again, I still go, but I just shadow and I say, you teach us. And I just love that.
And show us how you do it.
Sure.
Which isn't the only way to do it. And it's not even the only way to do it there.
Of course.
It's how they're doing it.
Yeah.
One of the things about what was different about where I grew up, and I think also partly the generational difference, I grew up in a place that was becoming a rural ghetto,
mm-hmm.
and it hadn't yet become super, super conservative. We had a woman mayor in 1930. There was a couple of men and a couple of women who were members of the congregation, but they were partnered their whole lives together, and nobody really called them out or any caused trouble. And she was the woman mayor, one of them. And it was just a very different environment. But when we did stuff, people were so self-critical. Is what we're doing to them what we would want done to us?
Right.
And by asking that self-critical question,
mm-hmm.
we could get to the issues that you didn't get to until you got to Ithaca College. Where so what I think happens to the country in the last 30 or 40 years is that we've become more pushing our agenda without really being self-critical.
Right.
And and so that means that people do stuff that's not welcome, or they don't do stuff that could be welcome if you did it with humility.
Right. Yeah. Hmm. deep insight.
So anyway, it's a place that we are stuck on some levels. What should we play next? Let's cut to music.
How about Blow My Feet by Mumford & Sons? I really like the song just because of the spiritual metaphors and what it's saying, and I feel like it's I've experienced kind of what it's talking about.
Blow My Feet.
You're cold as the blood through your bones and the light which led us from our chosen home. Now I sleep the hours that I can't weep, when all I know is steeped in black and toes. Well, I'll be lost.
WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Elise Steele. Elise, you connected with something about the reflection and self-critical piece.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, so last night I actually happened to go to an event on anti-Semitism and Islamophobia here in the community. It was put on by an organization called the Ithaca Coalition for Unity and Cooperation in the Middle East. And I've been to a couple of their events before, and they always make me think. But last night in particular, I was just really blown away by one particular gentleman. His name is Mahmoud, and he gave a talk... I can't even summarize it into a sentence because it was just so powerful and so many things left me speechless.
So what were
speechless.
The ideas that
well, one
you?
Particular, I actually wrote it down, the quote, and so I'm going to just read it out loud. It says, the violent othering we as a society have partaken in is rooted in a broken view of our own self-worth. Our society has lost the notion that we are created beings, and therefore we have lost the dignity and worth that comes with humanity. And part of the root of that is saying that as just the way our society is moving, you could say it's because, you know, we're losing, we're becoming a more secular culture or just, I don't know, but either way, we are kind of losing a value of humanity while assuming that we have this because we're very much about human rights as a community. But at right. the same time, when you take God out of that, I'm not saying that, of course, you if you're not a believer in some religion that you are a bad person or anything right. like that. But when you don't have the foundation of being a created being who is created with a purpose and worth, then you lose something there.
Right, right. And I'm gonna can I just step into
sure,
this?
Sure, absolutely.
Partly because of my life lived mostly outside the Christian community.
Yeah, yeah.
To say that you're a created being says that you are dependent upon a reality that's larger than yourself.
Yes.
And whether you're a theist or an atheist, that's a statement most of us can agree
mm-hmm.
upon.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a hubris
mm-hmm.
to humanity and our creativity mm-hmm. and our skills and their notion of private property. And we own it and we created it and
right.
we control it and we have to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a sense within both religious traditions and with humble humanist non-religious
mm-hmm.
traditions
mm-hmm.
that we can't make it right.
Right.
There are things that we can't fix.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that we cannot control, but mm. we still owe each other the dignity to engage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think so that's where I hear you. That's a way of saying it that doesn't involve necessarily the theistic piece.
Sure.
But
sure.
still honors it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when Mahmoud said it, this is coming from an Islamic point of view, and
sure.
I heard it, and I was just, you know, saying, Jesus, yes, that's exactly, that's not exactly, but, you know, he was saying, you can call it God, you can call it Jesus, you can call it whatever you want to call it, you can
right.
call it a force of nature, but having that value. And so, anyway, that same conversation just led to saying that how do we solve something like anti-Semitism or Islamophobia, how do we move past it? And it's really, you can't do it without looking in at the ways that you've participated in it. If you don't acknowledge that in some way, I don't care who you are, you have somehow participated in these this othering of a people group
right.
in your own. And if you don't acknowledge the fact that you have done it and actually think of ways that you've done it and kind of ask forgiveness from that in a way, then you can't move forward and be a part of the solution. And then it just made me think.
Right. Right. And it gets so complicated because there's the internalized anti-Semitism that some Jews feel
mm-hmm.
or the internalized
mm-hmm.
racism that some
mm-hmm.
persons of color feel
mm-hmm.
or internal. I mean, there's the externalized,
sure.
the experience of externally. There's also something that I've just begun to be sensitive to,
mm-hmm.
and that's Christophobia,
mm-hmm.
which is the same kind of prejudicial judgment, prejudgment of
yeah.
Christians.
Yeah.
And I mean I've started to coin that term
yeah.
because we need it in our language
mm-hmm.
because many people who've been on the receiving end of others don't understand. And I have a very dear friend who we were, after 10 or 15 years of being in close friendship, we were able to broach the subject because it's a judgment
yeah.
that doesn't get in the way in big ways, but it qualifies and mutes everything we can do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I've definitely, you know, experienced that. And I think just in general, our society is becoming less okay with an absolute truth, with the idea of an absolute truth. So
mm-hmm.
if you are someone who believes in an absolute truth, whatever that might be, whether it's Jesus is the way to heaven or, you know, there is a God or anything like that, if you're not willing to compromise on that, even if you are the most willing and desiring of good conversations with people who believe
right.
differently of
right.
you, no matter how much you want to hear that and want to engage and want to respectfully engage, there's an intolerance to if you aren't willing to actually compromise your own beliefs. And that's just something that I've experienced as a Christian personally.
Right. And I guess what you've told me is that people haven't respected the boundary of one person to another.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. in doing so, the people who claim to be open have actually given up that openness.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the rhetoric of absolute truth can be foundational truth. Mm-hmm. Can be this is from which it all begins, and I can see no other way.
Mm, you know, right,
I mean,
right.
This is there are many ways to express it, which don't get caught in the rhetoric wars, and people can hear it. But the point is that we are individuals in relationship, and not we don't need to control each other
right.
in order to have these conversations. How yeah. did you come to that realization?
Which realization?
Well, how did you come to this appreciation of I can be in conversation with others who don't share my notion yep. about absolute truth or God or Allah or Adonai uh-huh. or the Buddha or
right.
whatever. How did you grow into that awareness?
Well, I think it stems back to the fact that my heart, it longs for social justice, for just a justice in general. And mm-hmm. that seems unrelated, but it's not, because I know that the way to solve the world's problems, whether it's anti-Semitism or Islamophobia or racism, you know, any of those things, is through conversation. And so I don't know, even at ICUCME events, the ones that like I went to yesterday, mm-hmm. we have good conversation on what does it mean to have a conversation. And I think sometimes I've experienced conversation with people who aren't willing to, you know, you learn from experience, sure. you know? And so I've talked to people from both sides who come into the conversation not wanting to hear my angle, or right. who come to the conversation assuming that I don't want to hear theirs, and those sorts of things. So just those experiences have kind of led me to think, what do I want to gain from a conversation? What is my goal from that? And I think there's just so much to be gained from understanding what somebody else is experiencing, whether you agree with it, whether you don't agree with it, whether you don't really care either way, mm-hmm. just, the power of a story, you know, just hearing somebody's experience can really change you.
Right. And I think we live in a kind of a clunky time where we don't know how to engage each other. And we talk about conversation, and we talk about ground rules, and we talk about all this stuff, which is architecture or structures that we may need. Mm-hmm. But historically, it's mm-hmm. what I grew up calling visiting.
Yeah.
When we would sit and visit, and I'm wondering mm-hmm. with your West Virginia roots, if there isn't some kind of a quality of being able to just visit with another person yeah. where things get passed back and forth. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily in a position to judge each other, but you're in a position right. to really, you have opinions about each other,
right.
but you don't in some kind of cosmic sense judge each other.
Sure.
But you have, and you explore.
Mm-hmm. And you know where else you see that is in Middle Eastern culture, because they're so, radically about hospitality yeah. in a way that they just want your presence. And we in such an individualistic culture don't get that, you know?
And we've become that, but we didn't start that. We weren't there right, 150
right.
years ago.
Right.
Or we had the, I mean, that was about 150, 170 years ago. Was the rags to riches stories, you know, where
right.
the individualism became the myth that we all have kind of, not we all, but many people have aspired to. And it's the myth that it drives America's identity, even though it didn't drive its creation.
Right, right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
you made a connection with the hospitality of Middle Eastern culture and visiting and with your own experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just in there. I think it goes back to, again, like the value of human life, for example, sure. the value that someone has, you know, they just value you coming over to the point where, like, for example, a house that, or the apartment that some of the other interns lived in when I was in Lebanon, the people below them just happened to get to know them for some reason. And every single day they would say, why are you not coming over for coffee? You know, why? And it was because they so badly just wanted to experience their presence, you know,
and they didn't just happen to get to know them. That's hospitality.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so, and here we're so worried about, you know, I would offend you or make you uncomfortable if I invited you to my house more than once, or I don't want to make you, you know, go out of your comfort zone. And so it's just not the same as we have here. And so I think because that, that desire to serve us and to just spend time with fellow humans lends itself to an environment of conversation that we lack here in the U.S. Right. because we're so individualistic.
What I'm hearing And I See You See Me has tried to go this route. I think some other efforts have may have gotten a little further. There was a conversation between members of Temple Beth El and the Jewish community and members of the Muslim community where there was scheduled at a time of day where they needed to accommodate each other's afternoon prayers. And so they did it in each other's presence. And it created an openness to each other which they had not experienced before, from what I've heard from both sides of that conversation. There was a conversation recently at Lansing United Methodist Church with Muslims and Christians and secularists all at tables together in conversation. I think in this time, in this place, we are seeing more the possibility of more direct conversation happening. It's still a little organized. It's not spontaneous. My prayer for this show is that we could have these conversations on the street, and part of modeling it on air is to try to make it happen.
In
a wider, in a wider sort of way.
And I think, but again, kind of tying back to what I said earlier, with like an absolute truth too, we need to also be okay with the fact that you can leave that space not visibly change. I mean, you're going to be changed internally just because you understand a person, and there's such value in that. But you can say, you can leave and still not agree with them, and that's still okay. And I think that's something that just in our wanting to, just in our culture that's so much about social justice, which again, I'm all like all about, but I think it's gotten too much to the side of, well, if you don't change in some way or like become me, then you don't fully understand me, or you're not willing to enter the space of fully understanding me. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and I'm going to take it one step further.
Sure.
So what is justice for you may not be justice for me.
Right.
And we will experience it differently. We will need different things from it, and we need a world that is able to live with that complexity.
Yeah.
The ambiguity, the paradox, even the hypocrisy, because there will be times when we don't, when the terms of what's justice, experienced as justice for one people, will be seemed the opposite for another.
Yeah.
And that we experience that as hypocrisy, but it may be that life is more complex than we can understand or control. And that's what I hold on to.
Right.
Because you, what you have raised is what we're having a hard time accepting as a culture.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the station ID, and then I want to talk with you a bit about this event that's coming up on April
22nd. Sure, sounds great.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Elise Steele. So Elise, you are one of the organizers behind an event on April 22nd. Can you give us the name?
Yes, I would love to. So it's called Ithaca Believe in Love. And it is all about the fact that, you know, our country is so divided right now and in so many extremes. And pretty much you can choose an issue, be it politics or race or religion or anything, and you need to fall on one end of a crazy continuum, and you can't talk to somebody on the end, the other end of the continuum, and we have just lost, honestly, go back to what I was talking about earlier, a shared sense of humanity. And so we've lost a unity in that's rooted in literally anything, and we're choosing love. We're saying let's be rooted in love and focus on unity and our shared humanity throughout all of these different things that are happening in our country. So we're actually going to gather to celebrate love and unity in the Commons. It's April 22nd, which does happen to be Earth Day, so one of our subsegments is going to be love and the environment, but we're going to have incredibly dynamic speakers and performers and people. It's probably going to last about 3 hours if you guys can stick with it, but we think it's worth it because
what time does it start again?
4 p.m.
Okay.
Right on the Commons, you'll see us down at the Bernie Million Pavilion.
Bernie Milton Pavilion.
That's what it is. So
And they've moved Earth Day celebration to the 29th.
Right.
And there's a big Science Day in celebration in D.C.
Yes. There's a March for Science that's happening also on April 22nd, and that's actually happening before. So you can do both. You can march for science and then come celebrate love with us. But we get to talk about all different subsets of issues that we care about. So we chose love and race. Love and, like I mentioned, the environment, love and poverty, love and the LGBTQ plus community. And so we really wanted to say, okay, let's talk about these issues. Let's not go too deep, just because honestly, we aren't trying to, you know, be partisan or be a particular religious
group. And it's not a teaching moment. It's a celebration.
It's not, yeah, it's a celebration. So let's look at these issues from the lens of love. So let's say, you know, how can love interact with racial reconciliation? You know, how can that be the root of that? And that sort of thing. So we actually have a speaker lined up for each of these subsets. So we're really excited to get a bunch of people together celebrating love, singing together, dancing together, and just celebrating.
Is there a contact email or website or Facebook page?
So IthacaBelieveInLove@gmail.com is our email. That gets forwarded right to me. So you
IthacaBelieveInLove@gmail.com.
That's right. And if you have a Facebook, if you just type Ithaca Believe in Love, you should probably see it. It's an event, not a page, but join our Facebook event. There's also a really great video that my co-chair, Chris, stars in, I guess you could say. It's about 3 minutes long, and that's on the Facebook event, and as well as it's been shared, I think, over like 4,000 times now. But it really gets at what we're trying to communicate here. And so I would encourage you, if you can, I'm not sure what the video is called, if you could type it on YouTube, but if you go to the Facebook event, you can see the video and share that video, because how great would it be to get a video like that going viral at this time when all you see is such negative things? The video is about this love and unity. So we'd love you to share that.
So what inspired you to try to organize this event? I mean, you just talked about the general times, but what about the specific opportunities in your life and this community that inspired you?
Well, I can't take too much credit. So my friend Chris Bean, he's currently a junior at Ithaca College. It was actually his idea and his event. He is a global ambassador for an organization called the Love Button Global Movement. And it's literally, there's little buttons that actually say love on them. It's that simple. And it's all about spreading love in measurable ways. And so he thought, okay, how can I do that in Ithaca? How can Ithaca be sort of like the start to a global conversation that focuses on that? And so that's when he had this idea of kind of using Love Button Global Movement as an inspiration for an event like this. The event's also, we actually are going to have a service component of it as well. So in the morning, there are going to be volunteers all over Ithaca volunteering in the name of love and unity. And so then we come back together for this day, a day of service and celebration.
What kinds of activities are they going to be doing?
We have partners all over the community. There's actually the largest student organization at Cornell. It's called APO. It's a service fraternity. They are in charge of connecting us with organizations. And so they have something like, I think like 1,000 members or something crazy. They have tons of just manpower, and they have connections with pretty much every local organization. And so through those connections, we're getting into the major organizations, you know, things like Rescue Mission and food pantries and all of that. We might even just be cleaning up trash on the street, but we're going to be saying, you know, we're doing this in the name of love and then celebrating it together at 4 p.m.
That is really neat.
Yeah.
So Ithaca,
Believe in Love.
Ithaca, Believe in Love at gmail.com.
Yeah.
And also the Facebook event.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest is Elise Steele. So Elise, you brought another song. Shall we play Lost in My Mind?
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay. And this is The Head and the Heart. Yeah.
Put your dreams away for now, I won't see you for some time. I am lost in my mind, I get lost in my mind. Mama once told me, you're already home when you feel love. I am lost in my mind, I get lost in my mind. How's your engine running?
you tell me, my brother? Is there a star?
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Elise Steele. Elise, one of the first, I mean, this conversation where was really the first time we've gotten to know each other.
Sure.
Is just a continuation, though, of a conversation that we started a few months back.
Mm-hmm.
And what struck me was the capacity with which you could, with a sense of personal integrity,
mm-hmm.
be both supporting the Women's March here in Ithaca,
mm-hmm.
as also being empathetic to those who were protesting it among the Christian community on the sidewalks,
yeah.
and being connected to both communities,
mm-hmm.
and not having so much to take aside, but to be known.
Yeah.
Well, how do you dance that? And that doesn't belittle it. How do you live that reality?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's something that I didn't just decide. I really put I put thought in. I mean, specifically with the Women's March, I did put thought into just whether or not I could go, because in a way, especially through Community Faith Partners, I kind of am almost like a public figure.
You're a public figure in the Christian community.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. And I know that there were absolutely pastors who would have never shown up to the Women's March and would have been very against it for a variety of reasons. And so I had to weigh, you know, is it worth potential ramifications there? It wouldn't be unless I could really justify the fact that I'm going because I believe so strongly in something, and that was, you know, just general women's rights, even if that doesn't mean every single subset of that, you know. But
women's dignity, if you don't like the rights language.
Sure, exactly. And I decided that, you know what, it's worth it for me to show up and show my face and just my voice and say that yes, I'm willing to say yes, even though it's risky for my. I'm not going to say it's risky for my job. You know, I have a very very good board, but it's risky for my image in a way, I guess.
Right, and what people don't understand here is that there is a wide spectrum,
yes.
in the evangelical community, and there is more openness and more engagement than most people assume.
Absolutely.
And this is the ignorance of the secularists at time, and there is prejudice,
absolutely.
Towards secularists, but there's also, mm-hmm. ignorance from,
absolutely.
That community.
Absolutely. And I went with a Bible verse, actually, on my sign. I had a proverb that was about justice, because the reality that a lot of people who have kind of almost alienated evangelical Christians, the reality that they forget is that, well, even some evangelicals have forgotten this, that God is a God of justice, and he is a God of love, and of, you know, this worth that I was talking about earlier in this creed. You know, he longs for reconciliation and for justice. And so I wanted to just voice that and say that, you know, here I am. I am a Christian, and I absolutely believe in God and his firm biblical truth. However, because I believe that, not just in spite of that, but because of it, I felt like I had to be there.
I am marching with you because of that.
Yeah.
Not in spite of it.
Yeah. And I did run into a few groups who were particularly protesting abortion. And that on one hand is to be expected. On the other hand, I was a little disappointed because I do think the march was about so much more. And mm-hmm, so, sure. But for some people, it does become a one issue thing. But one particular, I felt for them and I understood why they were there. Did I think it's necessarily appropriate? Maybe not. And I had an awkward situation. We were actually just marching past my house because the march went right past my house and, with the people were across the street, you know, yelling at us. And I personally never took, part in the chant that said, you know, my body, my choice, like most people did, just because personally that's not necessary. It's a rough
take on
I have a different take on the issue, which is fine. And so I didn't go around telling people they're wrong. I just didn't partake in that chant. Well, the people in front of me absolutely were partaking in yelling at the people across the street. But then the other people would yell back. And I'm just, how is that representing Jesus? And so then we got around the block. And then there is an even more extreme, I guess you could say, group. And that's when I stopped even having sympathy to some extent for my own people, because here they're protesting and they're saying, you know, repent and you know, come to Christ and all of these things. And I said, oh, actually, I already am a Christian. And I showed them my sign and they said, born again Christian, you wouldn't be here, something like that. And right. I was just sad for them because I don't think that they are fully understanding God in a way that I understand, because I think that absolutely I'm a born again Christian and I completely understand where they're coming from, but also think that it's more important that, again, in that situation, I was there and I was bearing the burden of other women. Even though we don't agree on everything, I was saying, yes, but I see your hurt and I see your pain, and it is absolutely worthwhile of marching for.
And we can, and people don't understand either on one side Christ or being born again, but mm-hmm. they also don't understand what life is, and
sure.
and the fact that nothing is private. It's always mm-hmm. a matter of relationship,
mm-hmm.
and where many of the issues around abortion got derailed was the right to privacy, as opposed to a woman's right to choose in a complex related setting.
Yeah.
And to morally account for all of that
in a way. It's such a complicated issue. And that's why I don't even necessarily love to say that I am pro-life, because while absolutely I see the sanctity of human life, at the same time, if first of all, pro-life is just not actually pro-life, it's pro-birth. But
if there's pro-life is more complicated than the simple fact of life.
It is, and we've just simplified it in a way that just is, it's truly sad for everyone involved.
It's hurtful on both extremes, and it means as a country we are at odds with each other when we could be in compassionate with each other.
Yeah, very true.
So Elise, thank you for going even more deeply into that than I realized you would. I appreciate that.
No problem.
What do you do? The way we close the show is what do you do to take care of yourself emotionally, physically, intellectually, on a, you know, daily, throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, regular mm-hmm. basis? And how do you know you need to do that?
Hmm. Well, I think one thing for me is that I think it's important to know yourself, because, you know, self-care doesn't look the same for everyone. And so for me, for example, I get my energy from people. So while a lot of people say, oh, the best self-care needs to be, you know, just go alone somewhere with the book or something. No, actually, if I'm alone for too long, then I do go nuts. I need people. And so prioritizing time with people has been a big thing that I've been able to do, especially post-college. I've had more time that I can say yes to spontaneous time with friends. And that really, I might not necessarily be thinking in the time, oh, this is for my own mm-hmm. personal mm-hmm. self-care, but it absolutely is. And just being able to say yes to the random late night adventures or whatever, that's a way that I'm able to take care of myself. Whereas being what other people would see as being more disciplined by saying, no, I actually need to go to bed at this time, you know, that actually would would be less caring for myself. Right, right. And so that's one big way, is just my interactions with people.
And that kind of goes against some of the more pietistic Christian stuff.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. And I think, I mean, if we're tying it to typical Christian things.
I'm interested in what you do.
No, I think it's interesting because we actually at my church just finished a sermon series on the disciplines. And so the spiritual disciplines you think of being, okay, getting up, reading your Bible, praying, etc. And those have been absolute. That's also a part of my self-care, is if I'm not spending time with just God, then I also suffer. And so that's another absolutely thing I do. But we went further and we talked about, okay, what are group disciplines? Things like service, which is important to me, mm-hmm, you know, actually giving back to your community, but also the discipline of celebration. And that is something that we have absolutely lost in Christian culture. And it's embarrassing that people who aren't Christians do it so much better than us, you know? And so it's a discipline to celebrate with others, and to celebrate, of course, Christ, but just to celebrate also ourselves and
to love each other, to affirm each other's being.
Exactly. And isn't that what we're doing on April 22nd? Celebration, I think, is a way of, I take care of myself. I did mention before, you know, I love adventure. So I love going new places. It can be a random small town that really has nothing to offer, but if it's new, I just enjoy it. And so I think that's a way, maybe monthly, I would say, that I kind of take care of myself, is just allowing myself to go somewhere new. Yeah. And often with a friend or two, but even if it's alone, just because I'm an extrovert doesn't mean I can't, you know, have any time alone. And I've, you know, went through Europe by myself, and that was also really fun and exciting. And that's just a way that I'm able to, take care of myself and just to find joy in new things.
Yeah. And so you've talked about kind of relationally, emotionally, you've talked about, but more about intellectually and physically.
Yes. Well, okay. Intellectually, I am a huge nerd when it comes to podcasts. I love podcasts because I am not really an expert in anything, but I can be like know a little bit about a lot of things. I love that. And so
pieces come together that
absolutely.
way.
And so things like just This American Life, for example, is like, it's just hearing people's stories, but you get to know a little bit of things, or how stuff works, you know, little stuff like that. I feel like, oh yeah, that's something that I didn't even know that I cared at all about. And now I know enough to at least hold a conversation about it. I love that. It makes me excited, and it makes me like passionate about a bunch of random things.
Right. And it knits your life into the conversation and idea life of the rest of the people around.
Yes, yes. And so I do enjoy reading, but I enjoy podcasts even more, I think. They're just like little nuggets of excitement for me. And so I would say that, and then also
you're an discussing oral it person. You use your ears to learn.
Yes, that, yes. That. And then discuss it afterwards. Sure. So like I love nothing more than telling, you know, learning something on a podcast, for example, and then telling somebody about it. And I guess I'm in some ways a teacher like that, but that's another way that I take care of myself. And physically, I really enjoy cooking, and that's something that I didn't do a lot in college. Mm-hmm, and so I think our society has said that if you're going to actually take time to do something, especially in, you know, like the young adult kind of life, it almost says you shouldn't take care of yourself, and you shouldn't actually prepare a meal. You know, we're supposed to be so busy all the time, like running.
Right.
That's valued. And I'm a person who likes to be busy. So I'm totally fine. Just, okay, well, I'll just eat the peanut butter and jelly sandwich and then run, or the microwavable, you know, whatever. And so I think I've learned to instead prioritize time, because I actually enjoy the process of, you know, chopping up all the vegetables and all of that stuff.
Right.
But it also obviously makes you feel better too, to eat something that you've created. And I tend to stick to a more plant-based diet. I'm a vegetarian, not quite a vegan, but try to cut out that. And so I think that's a way physically that I take care of myself, is, you know, saying no to the lie that the world sometimes says that you can, you know, just be quick and shove everything in. And if you actually allow yourself an hour and a half for a meal, then that's wasted time. No, I say that's good time, and that's needed for myself, mm-hmm, to cook, and, you know, also for my body. But
yeah, I mean, cooking. Cooking as a physical activity can be exhausting.
Yeah,
and cleaning and all these other things associated with domestic stuff, which is what I like to exhaust myself once a day,
mm-hmm,
from either working out or from cleaning or from yard work or whatever. It just, mm-hmm, that's, mm-hmm, I kind of lose my sense of balance if I don't do that.
Yeah, that's great insight. And I also, I love getting outdoors, so I love hiking and stuff. You know, I'm not a big exercise person, quote, quote, so I don't necessarily go and run on a treadmill, but I'll hike in the woods for hours. And so that's kind of a way that I guess that I stay. And I also love walking places. I live downtown, which is so great because I get to walk to all the different coffee shops and just Green Star and all of that. And so that's a way that I just am more in touch with the community, but also allows me to have some physical exercise as well.
Mm-hmm. And I came to Ithaca in 1976 mm-hmm. with a similar sort of a commitment to justice, mm-hmm. with a deep organic sense of Christianity that was not that I could. The groups on campus were either on, you know, save yourself, you know, mm-hmm. or save the world, but they weren't integrating them, and I had grown up in an environment where the two things had to happen at once. So I just mm-hmm. I went off and went with the Democratic Socialists because they were trying to do both things at once, even though without a notion of God.
Uh-huh.
But I felt, and in those days you could not be Christian without invoking or inviting a certain kind of mocking and ridicule.
Mm.
If you invite that, it does not seem to get in your way. How do you manage how have you grown in that way?
Yeah. I mean, I think I try to ground myself in scriptural truth, first of all.
Sure.
And so that means that, you know, Jesus is very clear that if you're living like him, you will get some of that
sure.
mockery, some Absolutely. Of that ridicule. And so there's a sense to where I just say, that's fine. You know, in the same way that some of my family, of course, when I told them I was going to Lebanon, they said, oh, you might die, all this stuff. And I say, hey, to live is Christ, to die is gain. You know, I've come to terms with that, and I understand that, and I've moved on. But so I guess to the sense that I have experienced that, I'm okay with it. But at the same time, I think there's a humility that's also lost in Christianity and admitting both the mistakes that I've made and the mistakes that the church in general have made, right. and saying, look, I see that and I validate that we have caused true pain.
We have caused damage.
Yes. And I personally, even if I haven't done necessarily anything to you, I apologize on behalf of people who aren't representing Jesus well, because right. Jesus isn't those people, you know? And so I think that helps as far as the whole, you know, mockery and ridicule, because that gives a shared sense of humanity again. So if you're having a conversation with somebody who does think, oh, you're just a crazy Christian, it shows them that no, you've actually thought through these things. Mm-hmm. You're not just blindly following faith, and that you acknowledge again the sins of both you and people who you identify with, and then you're able to move on from there,
right.
if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. But the one piece that I think I tried very hard to find a community, because
mm-hmm.
I could sense that,
mm-hmm.
but you need a community around you to affirm that.
True.
So that you can continue to grow in strength in mm-hmm. that response.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're isolated and alone, it gets very hard to come back and say, well, it could be seen this way, or I apologize, or whatever, because
right.
there's too much weight on oneself
right.
at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you seem to have found a community.
I have, and I found the most bizarre community that I don't even know if we know, or they know that they're part of my community. Like, I have key people in Ithaca that I just consider like Ithaca heroes, and I just love knowing that they exist. And even if we don't all come together all the time, I just know that they're fighting the good fight, and that encourages me so much. People like Mike Foster down at the Rescue Mission,
sure.
he is like so tirelessly works with that population, and I just love knowing that he exists and that he stands up for whatever he believes in. So he might not even know how much I admire him, but he is in very much a part of my community, whether he knows it or not.
Strength that girds your life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or people like, there's another lady named Sarah Wiederkrantz who works really closely with Second Wind Cottages,
yeah.
and the whole gang down at Second Wind Cottages
yeah.
are all my Ithaca heroes. But like Sarah and I just got in a really good conversation about, you know, different rabbit holes and all of that as far as poverty and justice goes. And I just felt like, she's one of the people that just keeps me going, you know? And so I do think that there's a community, but it might not always look like we expect a community to look like.
And that's what I too am discovering.
Yeah.
And
that is my
life work.
Yeah. You might never be in the same room as them, but that's all right.
Yes. At least it has been wonderful to get to know you.
It's been great to be here. Thank you so much, Eric.
We're going to close with 21 Pilots Holding On to You.
I'm taking over my body, back in control, no more shoddy. I bet a lot of me was lost, teasing, crossing eyes and dotted. I thought it alone. about your life. It probably happens at night, right? Fight it, take the pain, ignite it. Tie a noose around your mind, loose enough to breathe fine, and tie it to a tree. Tell it you belong to me. This ain't a noose, this is a leash, and I have news for you. You must obey me. You are surrounding all my surroundings, sounding down the mountain range of my left side brain. You are surrounding all my surroundings, twisting the kaleidoscope behind both of my eyes. To make the beat, lean with it, rock with it. When we gonna stop with it? Lyrics at me.